This is the Preservation Technology Podcast, bringing innovation to preservation. The Preservation Technology Podcast is a production of the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training, a unit of the National Park Service.
Hello, my name is Catherine Cooper. I am here with
Gail Beaton.
So Gail, could you tell us what led you to deep dive into the history of Colorado women during World War II?
Well, I've always been fascinated with World War II and especially Rosie the Riveter character. And then when I was a high school teacher, I wanted to present the home front to the students in a manner that would be very interesting to them. So I developed a character called Gail Murphy, who's a bullet maker in Denver during the war. One of our facilities here used to be a Remington Arms plant. So I gave this presentation for years to my students, and then it kind of exploded on me, and I started giving it to all sorts of organizations throughout the state. And one time in 2014, I was giving it to a 1940s Forever group. And a woman came up afterwards and said she loved the presentation, but I didn't say anything about the Army nurses. And I said, you're right. I concentrated more on the home front and just barely mentioned women in the military. Didn't even say anything about the Army nurses. So I said, were you an Army nurse? And she's like, well, yes, I was in France and Germany during the war. So I said, could I please interview you? And she agreed. And after several hours, I thought, these stories have to be told. I mean, there was so much I had no idea about that it was time for somebody to find out and tell the stories. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Could you explain how you chose to create the umbrella of Colorado for Colorado women?
I was interviewing and finding more stories. I realized that there were women here in Colorado that maybe were from Tennessee and never touched base in Colorado until after the war. And I thought, well, their stories are going to be missed. A Tennessee historian probably isn't going to track them down in Colorado. So I need to include their stories too. So I kind of expanded into those who also were in Colorado, perhaps after the war.
How did you chase down all of these histories? How did you conduct the search?
A lot of it was done through the internet. Fortunately, many things are now digitized. Of course, I went to museums and archival collections throughout the state. There's oral history collections, as I said, at the Library of Congress. The University of North Carolina has a wonderful one on women's veterans. Of course, I looked at, it felt like all the books on the women in the Air Force, service pilots or defense plants, all the general books that one would expect. And then I found women through a number of different sources. One woman I interviewed that I'd met through a presentation actually was talking to a woman at her hairdresser and found out the woman was a cryptanalyst during the war. So there were all sorts of little avenues that I was able to make. Of course, I did tons of reading between transcripts and newspaper articles, obituaries, the census records, ancestry.com, diaries, letters. So a lot of different sources were used. I chose the vignettes trying to show the breadth and depth of Colorado experiences. So I tried to get vignettes that were women from the Eastern Plains and the Western Slope, as well as the Front Range. I tried to include Anglo women, Latinas, African-American women, even a woman from Eastern Europe. So that was one reason to include the different vignettes, especially at the beginning of the book. I actually was able, I think, to make sure that I got all my favorite stories in there. Some of them I had to push a little hard with the editor and the reviewers, but I managed to hold my line on that.
You've organized the book by field of service. Could you talk about how and why you chose that particular strategy?
It just seemed logical to me to split the women into the three major areas of their contributions, women in the military, and then on the defense plants, and then in volunteer activities. In doing the military, a number of people said, just combine the Army Nurse Corps and the Navy Nurse Corps because they're military nurse corps, but they actually had very different experiences during the war. And so I wanted to split them out. And then also, it just seemed logical to me. I guess maybe I was thinking that the military women were so unusual. Let's start off with them. Then I organized them according to when that particular branch was organized. So the Army and Navy Nurse Corps were before World War II, and then followed by the WACS, which were the first ones with the Army Corps in 1942. Then I guess I chose the second most unusual, and that would be the defense plants. And then the third, the women on the home front, was kind of typically women's work or women's jobs, doing volunteer activities, whatever war it is or peacetime, that seems to be be something that women are especially pulled in to do is volunteer work. I also wanted to highlight a woman in each chapter so that the beginning of every chapter would highlight a woman and her experiences in that particular branch or volunteer activity and things like that. Again, trying to show the diversity of Colorado women and their experiences.
Who do you hope reads the book and what would you like them to take away from it?
Obviously, I'd like everyone to read the book. I know that's not going to happen. But I think first and foremost, I would like that the children and grandchildren of this greatest generation read the book, because I think it's very important for them to understand what women did during the war and their male relatives also. You know, I put in the end of the introduction that when a person dies, it's as if a library burns. And I really feel that's true. And in writing the book, I interviewed a couple of dozen women and a couple of men. And by the time I was done and the book was published, 10 of those had passed away. And then since then, two more have passed away. So I'm kind of down to three surviving women. This really saddens me. And so I hope that the children and the grandchildren would find out their parents' or grandparents' stories before they're gone. And then I'd like the younger generations to read it and kind of come away with two main ideas. One is that women can meet any challenge. They just need to be given the chance and they need to grab the chance or force the opportunity. And secondly, I'd like them to know that Americans can set aside our differences, economically, politically, social differences, and actually come together and do some pretty great things and accomplish a lot. So I think those are kind of my two main goals in it. And it's why I continue to do my Rosie character and do book talks and things, because I think it's important. These women meant so much to me that I think it's important for their stories to be told. Rosie has changed so much, and I have gotten so many new things. First started out to be a 30-minute, this is what bullet makers do, and other women are doing other things. But now I can talk about the all-girl orchestra from Denver that traveled through the United States. I can talk about women that were crop dusters during the war because the men aren't being crop dusters in Oklahoma. So it's made me so proud to know just the great things that women have done. And so many of these women that I interviewed became friends. My Army nurse that kind of sparked this whole book just passed away in July at 100 years and 1 week. So I saw her two or three times a year until COVID, of course. And so they were always so humble. We just did it. It wasn't a big deal. I'm proud of what I did, but it was just, they asked us to serve, we served. They asked us to not go to school for the first 2 weeks of our senior year to pick skins off of peaches. We did it. We went back to school. So it's made me very appreciative. It's made me very proud. I think one thing that also really hit me is how much these women went through. We're sitting here in 10 degrees weather today, and I think of these women working on airplanes outside, fixing the bomb mechanism, and women who are washing their hair in a helmet out in Europe in the coldest winter in 1944 and 45. It just amazes me, and I have to stop and think, this is just amazing that these women did these things, and I know their male counterparts went through the same thing also. Just the physical deprivations that they also went through as well. We also don't think about women with PTSD and things of that nature until we look at our recent female veterans. But the women I talked to went through a lot of that also and found that, you know, they couldn't talk to people about their war experiences, especially in the military.
What would you recommend to people about trying to capture a bit more of these libraries before we lose them for the people in their lives?
I think if they would just ask them to maybe bring out the scrapbooks, photographs, that generation has them. They're not on their phones. And that's what these women did for me. They brought out their yearbooks and their photographs and their medals and things like that. And, you know, let me pore over them and ask them questions. I think if you just get them talking, a lot of them will talk and they'll open up. You know, ideally, it would be wonderful if one could videotape it, but even to just have it on a recording and have that voice as it goes forward. I think as we lose our relatives, oftentimes we think, oh, if I just could hear their voice again. And so the women that I interviewed, I made a transcription, which was painful, of their oral interview, as well as DVDs to give to their families or to hold for themselves. And I think that's really valuable. I could submit them to the Library of Congress's Veteran Oral History Project. One of the gentlemen that I met in all of this regularly does that. He works up in Northern California. Colorado, and he has gone to interview all sorts of male and female veterans for any war, and then he submits the DVD to the Library of Congress. So that would be something to do. I know a couple of the universities here also will accept those. I haven't asked the libraries, but I can't imagine that they wouldn't at least keep them in their archival things too.
Absolutely. Gail, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us.
You're welcome.
This was a presentation of the Preservation Technology Podcast, produced by the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training. To find more podcasts like this one, please visit our website,